Welcome back to Ryan and Brian's Bible Bistro. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Brian.
And this is the Bible Bistro, a podcast all about the
Bible, theology, and all things related to the Christian faith.
Yes, well done, Brian. Well done. Welcome back.
Pertaining to makes so much more sense. But
no,
anyway,
it doesn't. I don't know. There's no world.
I still think we should do a listener poll. Pertaining to, related to. So,
yes. Anyway. Well, anyway.
What episode number is this, by the way?
140-ish. It's between 140 and 150. I can tell you that.
What are we going to do for 150? I mean, that's a big milestone.
I am not part of the party planning committee. I am the technical committee.
Okay.
You are the party planning committee.
I'll call the party planning committee and see what we're going to do.
So. Yes, but no green streamers, please.
Green streamers?
I don't know. Haven't you watched The Office?
We've talked about this before. Really, no, I've only seen a few episodes.
Okay.
It's in one of those things that you say, yeah, I can't believe you haven't watched The Office.
Yeah, so. Well, there's plenty. You haven't watched Twins. I think that was the last thing I said. I can't believe you haven't watched.
That classic of American
cinema.
It is
a classic film.
Wow, okay.
It's a classic film. There are classic films.
Have you seen Casablanca?
No.
That is a classic film.
That's Casablanca in black and white. I am a color generation person.
All right.
No, I should watch it. I watched Holiday Inn. That's in black and white.
It's fair.
Yeah. It is. It's middling. And if you watch it on cable now, half of it's been cut out because of things. Anyway, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. Absolutely
nothing.
Speaking
of Leviticus. Speaking of Danny DeVito, let's talk about the book of Leviticus.
Yes, we're going through Leviticus. Again, we have just been talking about this, that we only have this episode and what, another two after this.
Yeah, we'll be done with the Leviticus series.
I'm just going to say this. I've looked at some of our statistics, and it doesn't seem that Leviticus has been the wellspring of hope for our listeners.
Well, this is the best series on Leviticus that's done on a podcast with a guy in Greenwood, Indiana, and a guy in Bloomington, Illinois.
Amen. 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 Well, we're blowing through it. So we've got a couple in the can. We've had three Leviticus episodes.
Yeah.
And now we're on to
three more. Yeah.
And three more. So we're halfway through. So if you're feeling like, I like the bistro, I just don't like this. Hold on.
There's more
you will not like later.
We just dropped this other episode with an interview. We got another interview coming up. We had interviewed Andrew Root, Dr.
Yeah,
Andrew
2
Root.
Weeks ago. Yeah.
If you haven't listened to that, listen to it.
Go back and listen to that. And
but if you haven't listened to that, I can't imagine that you're listening to this episode.
That's the truth. Because there was some gold in that episode. There was some gold.
That's fantastic.
And this is Leviticus, which also has gold. Yes. Also has gold.
But refined. Today we're going to be talking more about running sores and pus. So.
Yes. Well,
this is the weirdest part. This will be the weirdest part of Leviticus too. This is chapters 11 through 15 we're going to deal with today. So we've talked about the sacrificial system, which I think is really good. There's a lot for us to learn there. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the leaders of worship, the priests and the high priest, their responsibilities. We saw some warnings. We saw the things that happened when they didn't do things the way that they're supposed to. And now we're getting into the section that we call, it's about clean and unclean, what it means to be clean and unclean. Mm. And so really chapters 11 through 15, let me just kind of summarize. 11 deals with clean and unclean foods. That's what we're probably most familiar with when we talk about that. You know, what you need to eat meat from animals that have cloven hooves and chew cud, you know, that kind of thing. And then Leviticus 12 talks about cleanliness laws in relation to childbirth. It's a very short chapter, but that's what it specifically deals with. 13-14 is the classic skin diseases fungus and molds. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so then 15 is about bodily discharges. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned, guys. This is going to be the best hour of skin diseases, discharges, childbirth, and pork products.
Here's what I was thinking about, though. You know, so I want to talk about just clean and unclean a little bit. And I was actually thinking this, it actually happened because I was bringing up Leviticus on my Bible app, and they had it. They have it when you're going by book, when you're kind of looking through the table of contents, they have the law colored differently, these five books of the law and then the books of history and so forth, you know, so you can kind of pick it out easily. And it just occurred to me that these books, though, because I'm also working on a sermon series that's coming up later in the year from at my church on Abraham. And it occurred to me that these five books are the foundation. The law is the foundation for Scripture, and really everything else that comes after that builds on this. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples. I promise we'll get a couple of examples out of Leviticus 11 through 15, clean and unclean, that affect our understanding of the New Testament and Jesus. So that's really what I'm talking about is when we talked about sacrifice, it was the same thing. It laid the foundation, and then we could understand the significance of what it means that Jesus was our sacrifice. So I thought to put this in context too of kind of the larger book of Leviticus. We look at two passages. One, go back to one chapter before this, and I didn't ask you to get this. Can you get Leviticus 10, 8 through 11 pretty quickly?
Yep.
Get that for me. This is that after you had Nadab and Abihu, you have this warning about priests not drinking fermented, strong drink when they go to serve God. And we talked about basically it's because they're handling things that are very significant. Yep. So go back and read that passage for me. I want you to notice one of the lines there.
Yeah. Then the Lord said to Aaron, "You and your sons are not to drink wine or other fermented drink whenever you go into the tent of meeting, or you will die. This is a lasting ordinance for the generations to come, so that you can distinguish between the holy and the common, between the unclean and the clean, and so you can teach the Israelites all the decrees the Lord has given them through Moses."
So we have this kind of idea of the holy and the common, the clean and the unclean. You have to be able to discern these things, is what he's saying. You need to be of sober mind so you can discern these things. And then we get in 11 to 15 that talk about, well, what does it mean for something to be clean or something to be unclean? Mm-hmm. And then right after this section in chapter 16, verse 16, this is a section, and this will be much more fun next week. If you've already tuned out, then you're not hearing me say this, but next week will be even more fun. But 16:16 says, "In this way he will make atonement." We're going to talk about the Day of Atonement next week. "He will make atonement for the most holy place because of the uncleanness and rebellion of the Israelites, whatever their sins have been." He used to do the same for the tent of meeting, goes on. But basically, it's saying it's the uncleanness of the Israelites that requires the Day of Atonement to be done, and the holiness that comes as a result of this. So that kind of puts this section in context. He's warning about being able to discern clean and unclean. And then after this, he says, we're going to make an atonement for that, those things which are unclean. And so here's really kind of the listing of the things that are unclean and the things that are clean. Leviticus, and by the way, we're not talking it's not talking about dirty. We call this sometimes ceremonial cleanliness. It's the idea of things being proper and right in the presence of God. And that's really the main issue here. It's interesting when we look through this section, the different people that are being spoken to. So if you compare, for example, the very beginning of this section, Leviticus chapter 11, verse 1. Do you have that there?
I do now. I'm scrolling to it feverishly. Yes.
It says,
"The God says to Moses and Aaron."
So Moses and Aaron are addressed several times through this whole section. I think three or four times in these chapters, Moses and Aaron are mentioned. So we're talking about the lawgiver, the leader of the people, and Aaron, the high priest. And so this becomes a priestly kind of thing for leaders and for priests. And then chapter 12, verse 1, the address is a little bit different.
12:1. "The Lord said to Moses."
To Moses. So sometimes it's Moses and Aaron, sometimes it's just Moses. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of, again, remembering that Moses has given this on Mount Sinai in the presence of God. These are the things that are revealed to him. So the first section I've already mentioned, Leviticus chapter 11, is laws of cleanness and uncleanness in regard to animals, to the kind of food that we eat. Mm-hmm. And, the joke we always make is, thank God he now allows us to have bacon, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because you'll know in the Old Testament, in the law here, we're going to see pigs are considered to be unclean animals. To think about this and to think about the reasons for it, I wanted to go to the last part of chapter 11 first, though. Chapter 11, verses 44 through 47. And pay attention here. Go ahead and read this, and I want you to think about what's being said as we hear this read. So he gives us kind of the whole list of the animals that are clean and unclean, and then we get this statement as the summary statement.
"I am the Lord your God. Consecrate yourselves and be holy, because I am holy. Do not make yourselves unclean by any creature that moves along the ground. I am the Lord who brought you up out of Egypt to be your God. Therefore be holy, because I am holy. These are the regulations concerning animals, birds, every living thing that moves about in the water, and every creature that moves along the ground. You must distinguish between the unclean and the clean, between living creatures that may be eaten and those that may not be eaten.
Okay, so a couple things to notice here. One, do you notice it says consecrate yourself? So we've talked before about this idea of setting yourself apart. Mm-hmm. And then he says, be holy because I am holy. That's where we get that passage that you hear in 1 Peter, mm-hmm. for example, in the New Testament. We are called to a standard of holiness because we serve a holy God. And so that's, you know, kind of the foundation for this. And the next section, again, after we get through chapter 15, we're going to be dealing with the idea of holiness, atonement and holiness in much more detail. So the other part of this, though, is what else did you notice? What else was repeated there a couple of different times? There's this refrain twice.
It says, distinguish.
I'm the Lord your God who
brought you up out of Egypt.
So we've said before, part of the whole idea of the giving of the law, you got to remember the historical context. Mm-hmm. Even though it deals with things all the way back in creation, this is written to a people and given to Moses in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. So they are between Egypt, they've left Egypt, mm-hmm. and they're heading toward Canaan. And I've said before that you've got these people, the polytheistic people in Egypt, you've got the polytheistic people in Canaan, and God is saying, you need to be distinct from them. So I think a couple of times when he says, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, basically,
right,
is part of the issue. I heard a preacher one time say, I can't remember who this is attributed to, but it took longer to get Egypt out of God's people than it took to get God's people out of Egypt, right? It's that kind of,
yeah.
Sounds like a preacher thing, right?
It does sound like a preacher quote, I'll be honest, yeah.
And that's part of the whole clean and unclean foods, I think, has to do with you're not gonna do the same kind of things that they did down in Egypt. You're not gonna worship in this way. You're not gonna behave in this way. So there are certainly some of the laws that we'll be seeing, some of the holiness laws as well have to do with this, distinguishing them from the Egyptians and also from the Canaanites. We'll talk in more detail about this in just a minute, but at least part of this is he's taking them out of Egypt. I was thinking earlier this week, I mentioned I was working on a sermon series on Abraham, and one line that occurred to me, and I wrote it down in my notes, is that God's people always get in trouble when they go to Egypt, right? It always causes problems.
Yes.
And there's several times you might remember in Scripture, later on in Scripture, mm-hmm. that they're warned from going into Egypt. Now, do you remember the story of Abraham going into Egypt and how that got him into trouble?
Oh, yeah. He said that Sarah wasn't his wife.
Exactly. Caused problems for the Egyptians, caused problems for himself. So he went down there because there was a famine. And essentially, he went down, essentially like we always do, to take care of things on his own rather than trusting that God was going to provide for him. But there are other times, you might remember, that God warns his people, not just Abraham, but he also warned the descendants of Abraham not to go down into Egypt. Don't go that way again, right? And this constant threat of God's people kind of falling back into that pattern of going into Egypt and trusting in its military strength and trusting in its culture, just to be very frank, rather than being the set apart people of God who are placing their trust fully in him. Mm-hmm. So that's part of, I think, what's got to be going on in these regulations. And this call back to I am the God who brought you out of Egypt is, I think, part of what we're seeing here. Been talking a lot. Questions or comments to this point?
How does that correspond then to what's going on above here? You know, like if this is the main thing of brought you out of Egypt, is this, how do you see that relating to the animal clean and uncleanliness?
I'll give you some of the ways that this is understood. So one of the things I'd want to mention even just a bit before that is this idea of cleanliness and uncleanness. God does, like we see elsewhere in the law, God gives them a way to become clean. A lot of times it has to do with, wait until evening, cleanse yourself. If you come into contact with, for example, any carcass, later on, let me give you a story from later on. Samson, finds the the honey in the lion's carcass, mm-hmm. and it makes them unclean, right? Anytime you touch a carcass like that, a corpse of an animal, you're supposed to wait till evening. Then you wash your clothes in order to remove any residual uncleanness, and then you're made clean again, right? You're brought back into community. So a lot of times it has to do with being kind of set up separate, right? To be not to put yourself in community if you're in the state of uncleanness, and then you need to clean yourself. Now, to the question you ask, why? one of the things that some people have suggested, there's all kinds of different things that scholars have suggested. And by the way, this is not a Christian debate. This is a debate that goes way back into before the time of Jesus. This goes back into the Old Testament era itself, where we find rabbis and various writers discussing what they think is going on with these legal things. So it's not a new thing.
Right.
It's something that's been going on for some time.
Podcasts from before Jesus were discussing this topic.
Right. Yeah, the author of the Letter of Aristeas, for example, was discussing this. But
that was a deep cut from Brian, everyone. I don't even know what he's saying.
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. So,
yeah, but you just said it, and then you're just like, "Oh, everybody's got this."
That whets your appetite, and then I come back in and serve the main course. But
okay,
some people think that these are simply arbitrary. So basically, the whole question is, why are some animals clean and some are unclean? That's really the issue. Why can you eat a cow and not a pig? Why can you eat a lamb and not a camel? And so there's various suggestions been offered. One of them is it's simply arbitrary. Why can you not eat an eel, but you can eat a fish, like a salmon? Mm-hmm. But the basic law, so I mentioned the cud chewing and cloven hooved, mm-hmm. But there are animals like the rabbit who chews cud but doesn't have a cloven hoof. You're not supposed to eat those. You're not supposed to, so those kind of things. Why some and not others is the question. When it comes to fish, the basic rule is if they have fins and scales, fins on both sides and scales, then you can eat them. But if they're long and basically are in the mud, if they don't have scales, if they're smooth skin, you're not supposed to eat them. And there's regulations for birds as well. So basically those are the three, animals that walk on the ground, fish that swim and birds of the air. And birds of the air, primarily it has to do, we think, with them being predators. But the question comes, why what's the distinction here with these? And there's all kinds of different suggestions. All the suggestions do have some problems. So one of them is just that it's arbitrary. In other words, God wants the Israelites to eat what he tells them to because he told them so. So there are some who say, and this goes way back, this isn't a new idea, some way back basically are saying that God is testing the Israelites' obedience. Are they going to do what God says, even within relatively trivial issues of like what do we eat on a day-to-day basis? So there's some people who would say that. Some people suggest that there are associations with pagan rituals, and particularly with pigs. You see this a lot of times because pigs are used in sacrificial system in Canaan. And so there are those who say, well, that's why God said, I don't want you to be like the Canaanites. So you're not even to eat pigs. You're not to not only sacrifice them, you're not to eat them. The problem with that view, I think, is that you have lambs and other things, goats, that Israelites sacrificed that the Canaanites also sacrificed. So God doesn't outlaw everything, So now it could be that there's a role that pigs or some other animals had within Canaanite religion that was more important than others, but they clearly sacrificed the same kind of animals sometimes that the Israelites sacrificed. So were you going to ask a question?
No, I mean, I'm going to ask a question here in a minute. But.
In our day, and this goes all the way back to when I was in college, back, years and years ago. But one of the most popular views, I think, on this now in our current age, and actually goes to kind of the conversations we had with Andrew Root and some other things we've been talking about. But there are some people who think it has to do with health. So they'll point to things like that pigs are carriers of certain diseases, or that rabbits you know, are carriers of certain diseases. And therefore, God was doing this because it was for the best health of his people. Even with when it comes to the fish, a lot of the smooth skin, things like the eels and those kind of things, are more mud eaters. They're more, you know, and the birds are predators, you know, this kind of thing. And so the idea is that these are not the healthiest animals to eat. And therefore, I want you to eat those things that that are going to be healthier for you. Now, the reason I say that that's kind of the current thought is, and why I think this kind of relates to some of the other things we're talking about, is that's kind of an imminent frame. That's kind of a material thought, right?
It's not about the spiritual relationship. It's not about the spiritual, it's just like what does it mean scientifically?
Right. And there are some other questions that are raised there. And here's the fourth, and I think it, my own view, I'll go ahead and tell you, it's kind of a combination. I think there may be something to that third one, the idea of the health issues. But the fourth possibility is that there are symbolic reasons that these particular animals are used. And what's usually said in that line is things like, well, the pigs, you know, you might remember there in that passage you read in chapter 11, 44 through 47, it says, you shall not eat those animals that crawl along the ground. And mm-hmm. so kind of you think about the behaviors of some of these animals, like the pigs, you know, are in mud, right? Are in slop. Mm-hmm. That some of the lizards that are said not to be eaten, or the snakes, or they crawl on the ground, dust of the ground, and it would have more to do kind of with the symbol of those things that you should be a people who are different than mm-hmm. what we see in these animal kingdoms. Same with the predatory birds, right? This is not what I'm calling you to, and so I think there's something along that lines now. One really good treatment of this is a book by Mary Douglas called Purity and Danger. And her whole thesis is basically cleanness and uncleanness. And this actually goes through the whole law. It's not just this part of Leviticus. But she says the whole deal when it comes to us coming to the presence of God, and this goes into things we were talking about earlier before we started recording, you're talking about disfigurement of priest and these various things. In other words, when you come into the presence of the holy God, you're looking for things that are both normative and also a whole. So, you know, someone who's missing an arm or an animal has some kind of defect are not to be used. And because it's a reflection of the holiness of God and the seriousness with which we take that. So that's, for example, you know, what she would say with some of these. So it's similar to that symbolic reason, but she would say that the defining characteristic and the reason, you know, sometimes with other symbolic ones, we have a hard time. Well, why pigs, but not camels, that kind of thing. She would say it has to do with the idea these are normative. In other words, they're, if you read through the list and, you know, I'll have some animal lover disagree with me on this, but it's the oddballs, you know, it's the strange kind of animals that are the ones that are excluded. So the ones that when you think of a fish, mm-hmm. you know, it, like if you were a child, 3-year-old child drawing a fish, it would be that fish, right? Or a barnyard animal, that kind of thing. So those who are normative and those who are whole is her argument. So that may be what's okay. going on.
So there might be something. So, you know, that we've kind of got some things that are maybe physical about them, but right. you see most of it seems to be more of a distinctiveness that this is showing that they're different, and somehow the people right. are different than right. those around them, and that there's something about that these animals, as Mary Douglas kind of pointed out, that it's about the wholeness and
sure.
and normativity of it.
Right. Yeah, I think so. It's I think that it's similar to what we see with the other regulations about the tabernacle and coming into the presence of God and not doing it in a light manner and not doing it, you know, in a disgraceful way. Even you go back to what we said earlier about the priest not being drunk, you know, when they come into the presence of God. All those, I think all those are the kind of, issues, the kind of images that we're thinking about here. I did want to mention, I forgot to say this, one more problem we do have with chapter 11, and this is a problem throughout the whole Old Testament. You know, I don't know how many of you guys read multiple translations, right, when you're studying, but there's a lot of these animals, especially, that we are just not sure about exactly what they refer to. That adds a whole other dimension to this this question. And that's because, you know, the Hebrew terms are not always clear exactly what's being said. So, you know, you read the Psalms, and sometimes when there's a whole list of, you know, jackals and the mountain goats and the other kind of goats and, you know, the docidotes and, you know, all those kind of things, it's unclear. In fact, some scholars have said maybe less than 50% of those do we know for sure what animals, you get what I'm saying? This Hebrew word matches up with this particular animal. So there are some things that can be very clear. There's some things that there's no question on, but it's a lot of these, you know, if you look at the list of birds there, this kind of owl, and then there's that kind of owl, and then there's the, you know, the raptors, and the, you know, all these different kind of birds that are mentioned are sometimes difficult to pin down. So,
okay.
So you ready to talk about childbirth?
The hits just keep on coming.
Basically, the point here I want to make, and I'm not going to read too much of this, but in chapter 12, basically the idea is after a woman gives birth, if it's a male child, then for 7 days she is considered unclean, and then on the eighth day she needs to go up to the temple and offer sacrifice for her son. For girls, it's 14 days, and then also there's a longer period of time, 33 days on the part of a boy, or 66 on the part of a girl, where there's this ongoing, and typically after birth, this gets into the, this is really uncomfortable. This gets into the next section we're going to talk about, this idea of different kinds of emissions and bodily emissions and that kind of thing. So after birth, there's typically bleeding that's associated with that, and it's not the same, obviously, as menstruation, but it's similar, right? Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, the woman is considered unclean. So the only thing I'll talk about in this chapter is, again, God provides a way for women to be cleansed after this, brought back into community after childbirth. Right. Childbirth, the one problem here, there's not a problem with childbirth itself, I don't think. You know, in fact, this is what God says He created us, right? To be fruitful, multiply, back to Genesis chapter 2, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, right? That was the command that He gave, end of chapter 1. Genesis, but it has to do with this idea of the blood and the uncleanness that's associated often with these discharges, and I'll say more about that a little bit later. The one thing I did want you to notice in this is that there's always, like we've seen in the sacrifices, there's always a provision for the poor. So when they go up, they're supposed to offer a lamb, but if they can't afford it, they can give two birds.
Two young pigeons.
Two, what verse is that? That's chapter 12.
That is 8.
And so the reason I mention that is we see this played out in connection with the birth of Jesus, is on the eighth day, and it says in Matthew, as required by the law, he's taken to the temple, and is that Matthew or Luke? I can't remember.
Luke. I was looking it up here as we were having this conversation.
What is Luke 2, what?
Luke 2, 22.
Jesus presented the temple.
Yeah. When the time came for the purification rites required by the law of Moses, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves or two young pigeons.
So that reference here to law of the Lord is Leviticus chapter 12. So that's why I was talking about. This is foundational then for the story of the rest. Even the birth of Jesus, right, has a reference to this law. The fact that they use two pigeons we've mentioned before show that they're
poor.
They're poor. They're in the poor class, not able to afford the prescribed sacrifice. And so they give the alternate sacrifice instead. So that's all I want to say about chapter 12. Any questions about that? That was pretty quick, I know.
Yeah, well, we'll just keep moving. I got questions at the end. Questions at the end.
Chapters 13 and 14 then are about skin. It's basically leprosy. It's skin diseases, and it's about then also in houses. Some translations will say mold. Other translations will say funguses. So this is your whole skin disease and fungus section of the book of Leviticus. Now, it's interesting to me. It's interesting to me. The first part of it is, a lot of these have to do, I think, with rashes or boils. And the big deal is don't come into contact with anyone if you have one of these rashes. So all this talk we have in the New Testament about leprosy and these skin diseases that were communicable, right? These skin diseases that could be transmitted from one person to another. The whole point was stay away so that someone else doesn't catch the same kind of disease. In chapter 13, there's a great deal of detail about what these rashes and what these boils look like. But it comes to this, it's for the priest to help them identify which were the most serious diseases and which might simply be a burn or something else.
Yeah, because this is to Moses and Aaron here in chapter 13.
Exactly. So the priesthood was supposed to look, and if someone was brought to them with skin disease, they were trained by the law. They memorized these regulations.
And this is also whether or not they're supposed to be drunk. Have the fermented drink so they can go like...
They can tell, oh, that's clean, that's like, unclean.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you don't want something within the community that's going to cause, you know, a serious outbreak. This does have to do with health. That's why I think partly when we go back to the animals again, that whole idea of health issues might be a part of what's going on. I don't think entirely. And the reason is it just – so basically if they knew that – people ate pigs in the ancient world. They knew you didn't need a raw pig, right? They knew you needed to
cook. The old trichinosis.
they knew you needed to cook a pig thoroughly in order for it to be healthy. And so it's not entirely about health, I think. It also has that symbolic element to it. But this does show that I think there's a health reason for some of these regulations. Now, you'll remember the New Testament, there's all kinds of stories about lepers and, you know, the lepers come to Jesus for healing and this kind of thing. I thought it'd be interesting to look. And again, I love the law in this, that there's always a way to be brought back into community. So you're to be separate from community, but if your disease becomes healed or if it you know, and again, in the description, if it dries up and you know everything's fine, then we get Leviticus chapter 14. I'll read this. You go ahead and look at Matthew 8. I want you to read that here for me in just a minute.
I got it.
So Leviticus chapter 14, I'm going to read the first 9 verses because it talks about what happens if you find that you've been healed. The Lord said to Moses, "These are the regulations for any diseased person at the time of their ceremonial cleansing when they are brought to the priest. The priest is to go outside the camp and examine them." So again, they're not to be brought into community until the determination has been made that this disease is gone. "If they've been healed of their defiling skin disease, the priest shall order that 2 live clean birds and some cedar wood, scarlet yarn, and hyssop be brought for the person to be cleansed." The scarlet and the hyssop. Hyssop is known, you'll know this from Psalm 51. We sing this about wash me and I'll be whiter than snow. The hyssop plant had small white flowers on it, and so it was a symbol of purity. And so I think the scarlet yarn is a symbol of kind of this idea of the defilement, the blood, but then the hyssop is the cleansing. So it says, "He shall order one of the birds be killed over fresh water in a clay pot. He's then to take the live bird and dip it together with the cedar wood, the scarlet yarn, and the hyssop into the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. 7 times he shall sprinkle the one to be cleansed of the defiling disease and then pronounce them clean. After that, he's to release the live bird in the open fields. The person to be cleansed must wash their clothes, shave off all their hair, and bathe with water. Then they will be ceremonially clean. After this, they may come into the camp but they must stay outside their tent for 7 days. On the seventh day, they must shave off all their hair. They must shave their head, their beard, their eyebrows, and the rest of their hair, wash their clothes, bathe themselves with water, and they will be clean. So there's the regulations. Wait, are
they have shaven their hair twice? Shaven their head twice?
In 7 days, yeah. So
yeah. Get rid of that 5 o'clock shadow.
Well, I think, again, you think about some of the causes like fleas and this kind of thing. I've read descriptions. And I know you're going to tell me.
This is going to turn out great. This is going to be a clip that we're going to put on YouTube.
You're going to tell me I'm a nerd for this. I've read descriptions of some of the conditions in Civil War camps and heard some of these descriptions. And it's the same kind of thing there. They would regularly shave prisoner of war's heads. And basically because of the infestation of fleas and lice, right? And so some of these skin diseases, some of these rashes could be caused by, fleas, this kind of thing. So you got to remember it's a different time. It's a different world, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, and then on the eighth day, they offer sacrifice, basically a Thanksgiving offering to God for their healing. Now look at Matthew chapter 8. So again, think of this. This is foundational for the rest of the stories of Scripture. So we read Matthew chapter 8, and here's what we get.
Yeah. When Jesus came down from the mountainside, large crowds followed him. A man with leprosy came and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately he was cleansed of his leprosy. Then Jesus said to him, "See that you don't tell anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the gift Moses commanded as testimony to them."
That's Leviticus chapter 14 then. So you see what he's saying. Now, a couple of interesting things here, of course. Go ahead.
Well, I guess the thing that stood out to me just as I'm reading this is it's not like you're healed, but you're
cleansed. Right.
Like it's the process has been accelerated here that Jesus, you're now clean. Now, I'm assuming it's the healing of the disease. It's the healing of the disease, but it's also, he's also ceremonially cleansed so he can go offer the sacrifice.
That's a way to describe that. It's a way to describe the healing of his skin is made clean again, made cleansed. Yeah, you're right though. It's interesting. It's Leviticus language is what we have here. Mm-hmm. The thing I was going to mention is Jesus, of course, Jesus heals in a number of different ways. And here he reaches out
and touches
the leper, which would make Jesus then ceremonially clean by transmission. But then he sends him to the priest to do what's required here according to Leviticus 14. That's the main thing I wanted to see.
You think about that. He broke the law. Let's say he did what was not commanded by the law, but then also told him, follow the law.
Follow the law, right.
On the other side of it. That's interesting to think
about. It's much more of a complex picture.
I don't
want to
say broke the law. I don't want to say the word broke the law, but anyway.
So he's above the law is what I would say. He's above the law is not even the way to say it. You get what I mean. He wrote the thing, So
right.
So any other questions on skin diseases or those kind of thing?
Nope. You just gotta get your bird blood on you.
So the final chapter we're gonna look at today, if I can make it, is Leviticus 15. And this is about all kinds of emissions, and I'm not going to go into great detail. But these are all kinds of bodily emissions that can make you unclean. Some of them have a sexual nature. Some of them have to do with disease. And then we have menstruation as well as mentioned and dealt with in this particular
passage. I love how uncomfortable this conversation is.
I mean, it's the Bible, right?
Right.
You're going to talk about it.
Yeah. This is why most people skip Leviticus. Like, I get it.
Okay. Anyway. So I thought we would just take one example here again and show you a New Testament application to it. So why don't you look up Leviticus 15, 25 through 30. And this is about a woman being made unclean by her discharge. Okay. So
here we go. When a woman has discharge of blood for many days at a time other than her monthly period, or has a discharge that continues beyond her period, she will be unclean as long as she has the discharge, just as in the days of her period. Any bed she lies on will, while her discharge continues, will be unclean, as is her bed during her monthly period. And anything she sits on will be unclean, as during her period. Anyone who touches them will be unclean. They must wash their clothes and bathe with water, and they will be unclean till evening. When she is cleansed from her discharge, she must count off 7 days, and after that, she will be ceremonially clean. On the 8th day, she must take 2 doves or 2 young pigeons and bring them to the priest at the entrance of the tent of meeting. The priest is to sacrifice one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. In this way, he will make atonement for her before the Lord for the unclean cleanness of her discharge.
Okay. So a couple of different stories that always come to mind when I read this. One is David and Bathsheba. Because Bathsheba, it said, before she came in to David, had gone through the ritual in order to be cleansed after her monthly menstruation. The reason that I think detail is in Scripture, right, is there's no question that the baby born of Bathsheba and David's
is David's.
Well, David's adultery is David's, right? It's not Uriah's, because she's had her monthly period and she's mm-hmm. been cleansed. She's gone through this period of time, and then after David has intercourse with her, there's no question it's David's child. I think that's the main point of that. But it mentions this Leviticus again. The law serves as a foundation for the rest of Scripture, right? Mm-hmm. And in order to understand these stories, when it talks about it, here's the other one that always comes to my mind. And by the way, that idea of this discharge that goes on beyond their monthly period is similar to what we saw with the childbirth, because this discharge can go on longer for a longer period of time. So it's a similar kind of thing. But I want you to listen to this story from, it's in all three synoptic gospels. This is the version that's in Mark 5. Verse 25 is talking about a large crowd comes in and presses around Jesus. Then verse 25 says, "And a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. So this is exactly what we're talking about. This is not her menstruation. This is a constant kind of bleeding that she's suffering from. Verse 26, "She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had." Now, again, a detail here from Leviticus that I think helps us to understand that is she's doing anything that she can, is the way I read that, to take care of this medical issue that she has, because it's not simply an issue of health, right? We would think of it in an issue of health, but this has to do with her community involvement as well. What did it say in Leviticus? It said any couch or any bed that she would sit on would be unclean, right? And anyone who touched the bed that she had sat on would be unclean, right?
Yeah.
So this is an isolating, this is like leprosy. Right, mm-hmm. She is isolated from her community because of this, and for 12 years. So you can understand, and I don't even want to imagine the kind of ideas that doctors had in this day about what might heal someone. I've read some ancient doctors' manuals from the first century. And some of them are amazingly interesting, like there's some accuracy things. But when it comes, I'll put it this way, when it comes to women's reproductive systems, they had some really weird ideas. I didn't think to bring this with me today, but I'll read this for the listeners. But in one of the manuals, it talks about a woman has long hair because this helps this helps her become impregnated, because it draws the man's seed up into her long hair does. And that's, so a woman with short hair then is not going to be able to conceive. So, which, by the way, I don't know if you know, is not accurate.
But the Bible Bistro coming at you with medical knowledge.
You still want to consult your doctor,
after you listen to this. Please consult your physicians.
But there are some things that are pretty accurate. So you get what I'm saying. That's the kind of medical knowledge we're talking about in the first century. Mm-hmm. And so it says that I think it's accurate. She'd suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors. In other words, trying to to have this taken care of. She'd spent all that she had, and yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. And again, you can imagine the kind of treatments that they probably subjected her to. Verse 27, when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd. Even her being in the crowd would have been a bold thing for her to do, because again, anybody that she touched, anything that touched her would have been unclean. She heard about Jesus. She came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. And I just, the incredible faith there that she has, the desperation, obviously, but also the incredible faith that she has that Jesus has the power to heal her. Verse 29, immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him, he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples are kind of incredulous. "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "yet you can ask who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Now, I'll tell you, I think he knows. You know, I think he knows who's touched him. He's giving, in my opinion, and there's differences of opinion on this, but in my opinion, I think he's giving her an opportunity to come forward, if you will, right, to admit to this. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." So now that's a great story for a number of other reasons, not least of which it's an example of an interpolation. There's another story going on. Jairus's daughter, the death of Jairus's daughter is going on around that. And the two of those things intentionally placed alongside each other, because Jairus's daughter is 12 years old. Same amount of time that this woman has been suffering with the bleeding. There's all sorts of other parallels that we see here. But it's an incredible story. But again, it's that after you look at Leviticus and you think about the situation that she would find herself in, that gives us the context for understanding this story to a greater detail. So again, this is why we read Leviticus. Go ahead and read verse 31 for me. I wanted you to see that as well, just kind of a summary again.
"You must keep the Israelites separate from things that make them unclean, so they will not die in their uncleanness for defiling my dwelling place, which is among them."
So that goes back to the Mary Douglas book I was talking about, and the idea that this has to do with what it means to come into the presence of God, to be a community of people who stand in the presence of God and recognize his holiness, calling us to a standard of ritual purity, right? At least when we come into his presence.
So let me ask you a question.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a gimme, but so we're still in the presence of his dwelling places with us. Why are these, why not?
There's a couple of things I'll say. The first is this, Jesus, has a couple of sayings when it comes to these ideas of ritual purity. One thing that he says is that it's not what goes into a man that makes him unclean, or person that makes him unclean. It's what comes out of them. In other words, all of these laws, I think, were about transformation of people's hearts to be the people that God desired for them to be. And so while the Pharisees were very concerned with making sure they maintained ritual purity, but then, would do all kinds, they would keep the letter of the law, but they would do all kinds of things that were, they failed to recognize the people created in the image of God, right? And to love them in this way. So what the Gospels tell us is that in saying this, Jesus declared all things to be clean, right? There is no food that is unclean. This became a big deal in the early church as well, obviously, because you had people for whom, if you'd been raised this way, that you don't eat certain foods and that kind of thing, then that becomes a big deal to you. And so that's the first what we call the first council of the church. I don't necessarily like that.
Council.
Yeah, the Jerusalem Council. I don't necessarily like that word, but the first
Jerusalem
major
powwow is that.
It's just
get together.
I don't want to. Here's the only reason I don't like that word. I don't want to read back into it later councils of the church.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that was it this yet.
Yeah.
This is an issue that could cause difficulty. And so, yeah, the church leaders, the elders, literally the those who had wisdom and had been with Jesus, sat down together and discussed how should we approach this issue? Because Gentiles are now considered a part of the people of God. How do we, what do we do about eating together and these kind of things? It sounds funny to us, but it was a major deal.
Well, I've been reading Ephesians and Colossians, yeah. And then Galatians when Peter and Paul get confronts Peter, Cephas, about some of these things. Like it seems to be an ongoing issue that keeps having to be readdressed about this. There's we're not separate anymore.
We are separate, but we're separated in a different way.
Different way.
I would put it.
Okay.
And so I think the principle still remains that we want to be a people who are set apart for the worship of God, but it's no longer keeping the ritual purity laws that accomplish that for us. But I do think that there are issues about we don't quickly, the same way that we shouldn't be Canaanites, right? We shouldn't quickly adopt the practices of the people around us simply because that's what everybody else is doing, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one example, I think, of the way that we continue to be a separated people. I think it has to do with Jesus. What Jesus says is it has to do with the way that we are, the things that come out of our mouth, like our speech, right? Mm-hmm. He says food is eaten, it goes, quickly through the body and is eliminated, right? That's mm-hmm. that's what Jesus says. But what comes out of our mouths, the things that we say, our attitudes, those kind of things, those are the things that can make a person unclean, is what Jesus says. So that's the biggie mm-hmm. right there. Then, like I said, the early church in dealing with this, there were some things that they held on to. Meat that had been strangled is not supposed to be eaten. Blood. Mm-hmm. And again, blood is a big deal. When we talk about discharge, I probably didn't do enough about this, but this whole idea that blood being used for sacrifice within its prescribed place, right, within these mm-hmm. bowls that are used in the ceremony of the ritual, that's where it's to be used. It's not to be, eaten. It's not to be used in these other kinds of ways. Sexual immorality is the third time. A third thing, and meat sacrificed to idols, which even Paul, talks a bit about that and says, it depends. He would say it depends on what I'm conscience. Thinking, what I'm thinking about when I'm eating that. But he says, even if it's okay for me to eat food sacrificed to idols, but a brother who doesn't believe it's right, sees me, then that could cause an issue there. So basically I want to be careful in the way that I conduct myself. So. Now, does that answer your question?
Well, sure. I think when we started this, we kind of got into these things where it's, one of the things that's leveled against Christians today is like, well, why don't you do this anymore?
Right.
if you're going to follow the whole Bible.
Why are we going to quote this from the book of Leviticus? And we'll get to some of that. Mm-hmm. Why do you quote this from the book of Leviticus? Yeah, you go to the barber and cut your hair. Mm-hmm. You don't have four locks, this kind of thing.
Yeah. So I just think it's always the thing to think in front of us. But then again, that was my question, but also saying that, Leviticus does... We understand more of what's happening in the New Testament because of what's been set out here.
And I think there are principles that continue to apply to us, and that's where we are set apart people. We still are peculiar people, right? Mm-hmm. To use that Old Testament phrase.
All right. So I'm just trying to think the so what here. Someone listened to this, like, what do you, I think you kind of hit on it. It's like, mm-hmm. we're still called to be set apart people.
I think so, yeah.
But it's not by the food anymore, but there's a different separateness that we have.
Yes.
But, that this was pointing towards, this was kind of a typology of separateness.
Right. I forgot to say, the author of the letter, Aristeus, thinks that it's the symbolic reason. That's what he argued. So, anyway,
whoever that is. All right. Pique your interest for that little nugget of whatever that was. All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate
no problem,
it.
Ryan.
And just to remind everyone that you can go to our website, thebiblebistro.com. We have a little bookstore there. If you're finding any of this interesting, we've got a book on there that talks about some of the Leviticus stuff that you can pick up. We've actually got a couple on there. One of them is from College Press, from James E. Smith. It's a little that's all about some of the stuff. I've got it in my Logos, but it's a nice, easy read that you can check out there. But that we've got plenty of the resources. Again, we referenced Andrew Root episode. We've got books and all kinds of stuff in there. So if you're finding any of this interesting and you want to dig into some of it on your own, there are resources there. There are links provided that you can buy on Amazon. Again, no different charge for you, but it does give us a couple bucks just to help. And some of it, not even a couple bucks, cents that we get from that to kind of help pay for, you know, our hosting and everything like that.
Yeah, so. We do appreciate it too. There is production costs that are associated with, there are production costs that are associated with making this podcast, and any help that you can give us, we appreciate.
Yeah, we're getting close. We're getting close to covering the hard costs of just, you know, the hosting and everything in between. So we're getting close there, and so we want to say thank you to everyone that's listened.
Yeah,
and if this is helpful to you, please share. Follow us on Facebook, on Instagram. You can sign up for our email newsletter. Something's going to come out here. We're beefing up the website so we can make the email newsletter a little bit better to add some more content there as well. But next week, if you hated this episode, next week we're going to have a great episode. We have a testimonial of sorts, a very different episode for us.
I mean, not even kidding. This is, next week is probably the best episode we've ever done.
Yes, and I reminded Brian as we got done recording this, he's like, "This is the best episode we've ever done." And I said, "Yes," and we talked very little. So
right, which says something, I think.
Something about us as well.
Yeah, but make sure you listen to this.
Make sure
one.
Next week you're not going to want to miss that. If you're from the Lincoln area, your restoration movement kind of thing, you're going to recognize the name. But it's going to be a fantastic episode. Yep. So hope you join us for that. Brian, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And yes, next Tuesday, check in. Great episode.
Enjoy a bacon cheeseburger.
Enjoy your bacon cheeseburger. On that note, a little at the end. All right. Enjoy your bacon cheeseburgers as New Covenant people. Take care.
See you later.
Bye.